Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Thursday, October 27th. Today, we're visiting with the Sun's environmental reporter, Michael Booth, about Denver's e-bike rebate program, health insurance rates, and, of all things, ultimate frisbee. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Forvis. Forvis is an accounting and advisory services firm that offers comprehensive assurance, tax, and advisory services to various industries. Created by the merger of equals of BKD and DHG, Forvis now ranks among the nation's top 10 professional services firms. To learn more about how Forvis can help your organization manage change, stay compliant, and bolster your bottom line, visit their website at forvis.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. 1,000 people gathered on the University of Northern Colorado campus in Greeley on this day in 1972 to dedicate a new library building to arguably the most famous person ever to serve on the school's faculty, internationally renowned author James A. Michener. In 1936, Michener accepted an invitation to join the faculty at Greeley's Teacher Training School. He left Greeley in 1941 to serve in the Navy during World War II. These experiences inspired his first book, Tales of the South Pacific, in 1947, which won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction. His affection for writing carried him around the world, studying regions in depth and then writing stories of generations who lived in a specific, exhaustively portrayed place. When UNC named its library for Michener in 1972, he was living in Colorado compiling information for perhaps his best-known work, Centennial, published 2 years later. It offers a fictionalized account of life along the South Platte River from prehistoric times through the 1970s. The UNC library, which displays a bust of its namesake, stands as the perfect tribute, as Michener himself declared in 1989, quote, "My life has been affiliated with libraries. I couldn't live without them. And for me to think that on the campus where I worked so diligently, a noble library will commemorate those years when I grew up intellectually is delightful." Before we continue, want to keep up with the Colorado Sun's events? Good news, you can get an email right to your inbox each month with an overview of all upcoming events. Visit coloradosun.com/events and click on the yellow button that says Sign Up to opt in. Again, that's coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today, and grateful to be here with our intrepid environmental reporter, Michael Booth. Hey, Mike.
Hey, another beautiful October day.
It is remarkable. I have absolutely treasured the autumn that we've had here this year, and I know you have too. We get to talk about that a little bit each week offline, and I appreciate that. One of the things I'd like to talk about online is couple items that you had in your temperature newsletter yesterday, you and John Ingold. And the first thing that really hits home for me is the e-bike program that the city and county of Denver basically had to end because they ran out of money. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, way too popular, which is good news and bad news. And that story also is available on the website, although people could have seen it a little bit earlier in the temperature, which we always recommend if people subscribe to that. So e-bikes have just been flying off the shelves for even without a rebate and a subsidy. But if you offer a rebate, people are lining up and staying up till midnight, pressing that button over and over again, trying to get the subsidy. And what Denverites did is they went and spent the city's money that had been planned for 3 years of subsidies for e-bikes in 6 months. And so the city has decided that it needs to pull back and regroup. They were planning to have a couple more monthly releases of the e-bike vouchers the rest of this year, but they're saying that's now been halted. They are vowing that they will come back with millions more dollars in subsidies for next year, but they need to kind of go through the budget and figure out how to do the mechanism to get that money back in the budget. So there will be thousands more e-bike rebates available next year, but for now, it is sold out.
It fascinates me because you and I have talked before. I got one of those vouchers. I believe it was in the first round in July. I got a voucher that partially covered an e-bike. I got a Rad power bike, which I absolutely am in love with. I had sold my vehicle 2.5 years ago at the beginning of lockdown and just, you know, was riding my road bike or using public transit. And then I got that voucher and the cargo bike really actually has prevented me from having to buy another car. And I love that.
So you're doing exactly what the city was hoping for in replacing fossil fuel car trips with cleaner generated electricity in the form of battery-powered e-bike. We are taking one of our kids to school every day back and forth on a cargo e-bike. We didn't get a subsidy voucher. We bought it used from a friend. So people who do get the vouchers obviously feeling very lucky right now. But it's just it's a very popular program. The state is going to roll out its own program and offer them statewide and offer them to cities to sign up for creating their own programs. Some activists would like to see, and I think so, what some budget analysts would like to see, is some money set aside for studying whether, in fact, it is replacing car trips and how many. Anecdotally, we hear that it does, but we also hear anecdotally that people were just really hot to get a new e-bike as a toy and jumped on the city subsidy to get one. So the city at some point is likely to face more questions about accounting for the actual number of car trips that they are replacing and how to make sure that they keep targeting the program to the kinds of people who will do that.
Well, and that makes sense. And I would guess, you know, as in everything that has multiple sides to it, that both of those things probably are true. You know, in my case, it prevented me from going out and buying another car because I was kind of getting to that point. You know, I take care of an elderly mother and this prevented me from needing a vehicle because the tires are nice and fat and wide and I can get through, you know, snow or ice this winter with this bike. And so it is, in my case, preventing purchase of a car. Other folks, like you said, you know, maybe that's not the case, but they have an additional mode of transportation for when they want it.
And there are thousands more of them on the road now, thanks to the city of Denver subsidies and maybe also in garages. Another thing that might creep up more and more often, I know we have been concerned about this ourselves, and I'm sure you've dealt with the same thing, is how to keep them safe. There's a huge lot of theft going on all across the metro area for all kinds of vehicles, including fossil fuel cars and EVs, but people would love to grab these e-bikes. So we certainly highly recommend that people, when they do spend that much money on an e-bike, a little extra more just for a good locking system.
Exactly. And I have to confess, I haven't dialed in a great locking system. I have a traditional one, but I am going to do better about that. Right now, I'm able to, you know, take the bike inside when I'm at home or when I'm somewhere else with it. But I do see, you know, I live in Cap Hill, and I already see on our local next door that these bikes are getting stolen. And, you know, I had a road bike stolen a few years ago, got that replaced. Now, of course, that's another concern that we do live with in the metro area and elsewhere.
Make sure you register whatever you've got, both with yourself and with local authorities. Write down the serial numbers. Some of them do get recovered, and there are ways to make that more possible by registering your bike online with some nonprofit groups that register the serial numbers. You see people in coffee shops kind of getting the angle out the window to keep an eye on their bike on the curb.
Right. It's a particular neck bend that we probably all have. The other thing that I was hoping we might be able to touch on is health insurance rates. I know that, you know, our colleague, John Ingold, 3 weeks from yesterday, so November 16th, is going to host a virtual event on health insurance headaches and how to navigate this year's open enrollment, which is coming up. And there was an item, again, in the Temperature newsletter on health insurance rates. Can you speak to that?
Sure. And John always does a great job, both in the Temperature and on the website, in explaining these very complex insurance issues in a way that people can understand. Looks like there's about a 10% increase for this particular group of people we're talking about in open enrollment, which are people who are buying it on the state health insurance exchange. And insurers are on that exchange trying to compete with each other on price, we hope. And you can also, that's the only way to get the federal subsidies, the advanced premium tax credits, if you qualify for those. So those rates are going up on average about 10%. It looks like the state is arguing that it could have been a lot worse if they didn't have reinsurance programs in place that protect consumers. It's still a significant jump as we are all facing increases in our utility bills, in our adjustable rate mortgages, in any number of things, and a bunch of issues on the ballot in the next 2 weeks for voting that could raise our taxes even more. So it's of a concern, but it's not out of control as it was in the early 2000s and late 1990s. And so John explained all that, and the forum will do that, as well as explaining other people who go through open enrollment. I mean, we all do in a way. If you do have employer's insurance and you're lucky enough to have choices of places to go, there is open enrollment for you as well this fall and into early winter, where you can decide that plan wasn't working so well for me. My deductible's too high, or I'm planning a lot of procedures this next year, so I don't want to do the deductible, and you can switch your plan.
Right. No, that's great advice. And the event that John is going to moderate. It'll be a panel of health insurance experts on the evening of November 16th. And if folks are interested in signing up for that, and even if they sign up, then, you know, they can watch the recording later if they're not able to make it that evening. And that's at coloradosun.com/events. And that'll take you to our event page where folks can sign up for health insurance headaches, how to navigate this year's open enrollment. Thanks for the details on that, Mike. And let's end this on a note that we always don't always get a chance to, and that is on sports. You and Hugh Carey did this great piece on the ultimate Frisbee teams that we have here in Colorado. Tell us what that's about.
We are the champions, and people should pay double their membership in the Colorado Sun if I don't sing the words to that song. But we are the champions, and it's pretty cool. And this is the kind of sports we love to cover. There's enough words about the Broncos and the Rockies and everybody else. And what we like to cover is the sports where people are working incredibly hard in their spare time, don't get paid for it, and then get great results. So both the men and the women, their teams each won the club championship in ultimate disc. And it's a great sport. It combines some of the elements of soccer and football and basketball in the terms of you can't run once you've caught the disc, emphasizes passing, emphasizes great sportsmanship, sportswomanship, in terms of teams mostly refereeing their own games and making their own fouls and calling their own points and keeping track of it that way. But Molly Brown's team won for the women, and Johnny Bravo won among the men, competing against some teams that they've been in the finals and the playoffs for a long time and finally overcame that last hurdle and had some great victories. And these are people who are often post-college, somewhere between 20 and 30, and want to continue some kind of athletics on a team. And this is the amateur way to do it. And it's just a great thing. And we just want to congratulate the men and women who made that possible and have brought these championships back home to Colorado for the first time.
Well, huge congratulations to both of those clubs. It's super fun, and folks can see some of the photos and the work that you and Hugh Carey put together on Ultimate. And Hugh himself is a huge, he's gone to international Ultimate championships himself on teams that he plays with. So
he absolutely knows his stuff, and combine that with his great camera angles and people have a fun package to go to.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, Mike, as always, thank you for dropping by. I always appreciate talking to you. And thanks to everyone who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. And have a wonderful day out there. And I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next episode of the Daily Sun Up.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Two people are dead after an early morning police shootout at a light rail station in Douglas County. Sheriff Tony Spurlock said Wednesday deputies shot and killed two people inside a stolen vehicle in suburban Denver after the suspects opened fire. Spurlock estimated about 35 rounds were fired between the suspects and six deputies, and one deputy had minor injuries from flying glass. The shooting happened after deputies patrolling a light rail station parking lot approached a vehicle that had no license plate and the locks punched out. 5 years after Crested Butte's troubles with the U.S. Postal Service began to pile up, lines still snake around the mountain town's too small post office. Residents still bemoan the difficulty of retrieving their mail. There have been meetings with the post office, and U.S. Senator Michael Bennett is getting involved. Some residents are even making standing in line a business, charging $50 an hour to retrieve their neighbor's mail. But when asked if the town has any solutions and answers, town manager Dara McDonald still shakes her head in resignation. People who buy health insurance on their own in Colorado will pay more next year, but not as much as initially proposed. Insurers this summer requested an 11% increase in premium prices in the individual market. In finalized rates released Tuesday, that increase dropped to 10.4%. In the small group market, where small companies buy insurance for their employees, premium prices are set to increase by an average of 7.4%. Insurers had originally requested a 9.2% increase. In an effort to keep down premiums for 2023, regulators limited insurers to a 2% profit margin. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And The Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.